As you guys may have heard, we're recording the conference. Since we have Chemi with us on the line and the time now is 2:33, we will start. What I'll ask people to do is, if you don't mind, to mute yourselves by pressing *6. So if people could go ahead and mute themselves by pressing *6, we'll all do it now.
Hey, what do you do?
This is Art Preisinger.
Okay, great. Thank you all for muting yourself. When time comes during the Q&A session, I will ask you to unmute yourself, but for the time being, let's keep it that way. I'd like to welcome everyone to this Americans for Peace Now briefing call on the early elections in Israel. The Knesset today dissolved itself and announced the early elections on January 22nd. Our briefer, Chemi Shalev, is with us on the line, and I will soon ask him to start. I'll introduce him first. I am Ori Neer, APN spokesman. This call will start with a short presentation by Chemi, which will be followed by a Q&A. We are recording the call, and a link to the audio recording will be available shortly after the call is over. All participants would be muted during Chemi's presentation, and I thank you again for muting yourself by pressing *6. We will tell you what to do later on, as I said, to unmute yourself for in order to ask a question. I'd like a few introductory remarks really quickly before we start. Chemi Shalev is now the New York-based U.S. editor for the Israeli daily Haaretz. He also writes an online blog for Haaretz, which is called West of Eden. It focuses on U.S. politics, U.S. relations with Israel, U.S. Jewish community. Chemi has been covering the Arab-Israeli diplomatic process, U.S.-Israeli relations, and Israel's internal politics for almost 30 years. I still remember him as a correspondent for Davar and for the Jerusalem Post in the 1980s and 1990s. Then he worked for Ma'ariv and for Israel Hayom, where he was the deputy editor. I had the honor of working with Chemi and cooperating with him at the Forward when I covered Washington for the Forward, and he was writing a very successful weekly political column from Israel. It was a reported analysis of sorts, which was called The Situation. People who are subscribed to The Forward may still remember it. We asked Chemi to talk about the current situation in Israel's political arena following the Prime Minister's decision to go to early elections. Chemi will talk about the ramifications in terms of U.S.-Israeli relations and the prospect for a renewed peace efforts. So, Chemi, the floor is yours, and we will follow your remarks with a Q&A session.
Thank you very much. I'd like to talk about the elections, what is known about them, and what is not known about them. And see where we might go from there. First of all, ever since Prime Minister Netanyahu announced that he was holding early elections, there has been a near consensus among Israeli pundits that this is going to be the most boring election in history, that the results are known in advance, that there's no point in taking on Netanyahu, that there is no alternative to Netanyahu, that public opinion has irrevocably turned to the right, that Netanyahu has performed well, that he's brought stability to Israel economically and from the point of view of a security, and that he has enlisted the world in sanctions against Iran, and he has stood up to that evil President Obama. And all sorts of things that play in his favor. And indeed, if you look at the polls that have been published, most of the polls that have been published, with the alignment, if the alignment stays the same as it's been, then the right wing will have its majority in the Knesset, as it always has. Perhaps it'll be even a little bigger. And so there's no point. I mean, most there's been a lot of sighing. And people that I've been talking to, as if there's no point really in having the elections, why don't we just announce that Bibi goes on for another 4 years and be done with it? Of course, one has to be careful of conventional wisdoms. I'm sure that I don't recall anybody expecting President Obama, for example, even those people who predicted that he would not do well in the debate with Governor Romney, I don't think anybody that his not doing well would result in such a precipitous fall of his ratings. So conventional wisdoms are what they are. They are conventional wisdoms. And I think 24 hours later, if this were the conventional wisdom yesterday, I think perhaps right now the conventional wisdom might be changing a little because things happen. And there's this famous cliche that elections are like war. You know where you start, but you don't know where they're finished. What has happened in the past 24 hours? First of all, the Likud's most popular politician, communications minister Kahlon, has resigned. He was the symbol of two things. He was the symbol of Likud efficiency because he successfully ended the monopoly of the big companies in Israel's telecom industry, and he was also the symbol of the Likud's social credentials and their connection to lower-class voters because he brought the bills down significantly for most Israeli cell phone users. And he's resigned for reasons that are not completely clear. And even though Netanyahu says that he will try to get him back, he won't. Unless Kahlon surprises everyone. Now, this deprives the Likud of one of their bigger stars, and it also deprives them of what used to be, their strong suit, which is their connection to the poorer North African communities that traditionally vote Likud. Now, the fact that Kahlon was a strong social card of the Likud is especially significant, and I'll get back to that later. Another development, which I think is perhaps a few minutes old, is that Channel 2 announced that Arya Dery, who most of you, I'm sure, are familiar with. He used to be a very popular politician until he had to go to jail for a few years for taking bribes, and since then he's come out, and now he's making his comeback. Channel 2 announced that Arya Dery will apparently be the new chairman of the Shas party. This is very bad news for the Likud, because Arya Dery is not in the pocket of the Likud, unlike his predecessor, Eli Yishai. Not only that, but Arya Dery, who is a very charismatic leader, could quite possibly call the shots in Shas, which is something that Eli Yishai didn't do, because Rabbi Ovadia, who is the spiritual leader of Shas, is getting older and older, and frailer and frailer, and may not be able to boss Dery around anymore. So with Dery running, if that is true, if Dery is going to be the head of the Shas party, this completely changes the equation, because Dery might go with the Likud if he doesn't have any choice, but if he has a choice, he'll go with somebody else. So I think that Netanyahu, who may have thought, as happens a lot of times with Netanyahu, he may have thought that this was a very brilliant move, this bringing up the elections. I'm not sure he even thinks that way today. Now, these are developments that have taken place in the past 24 hours, but the extraordinary thing about this election is that, except for the fact that Netanyahu is going to be heading the Likud and perhaps Lieberman is going to be head of the party to its right, Israel Beiteinu, nothing else is clear. And Shelly Yachimovich will be heading Labor. Nothing else is clear. And the most important thing is that it's not completely clear who will be the alternative to Netanyahu, who will be the person that people who want to replace Netanyahu will have to go and vote for. Now, if you would have told anybody 6 months ago or a year ago that one of the candidates, perhaps the leading candidate right now, to be that alternative to Netanyahu is former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, you'd be laughed out of the room. But the fact is that the entire Israeli political community is now awaiting Olmert's word. Perhaps he's awaiting the word of his lawyers about whether he can legally run for the post of prime minister. The gossip is that he also needs to convince not only his lawyers, but he also has to convince his wife, who does not want him to return to the public arena. But the polls, there have been a few polls that have placed Olmert at the head of a theoretical central coalition of parties. And in some of those polls, he has actually done much better than Netanyahu and the Likud. So, of course, this excites this excites the left wing and the center, and it, of course, is a source of anxiety for Netanyahu, who many people believe brought up the elections in the first place in order, because he thought that by doing so, he would circumvent the possibility that Olmert would be strong enough to run against him. You of course, as many of you know, Olmert is involved in a whole series of legal issues. He was exonerated on two counts a few weeks ago, but was indicted on a third, but that third one does not prevent him from running, and he's still standing trial for a major bribery trial connected to the Holy Land complex in Jerusalem. Now, nobody has any doubt, one, that Olmert has a burning desire to reestablish himself. He feels that he was deposed illegally, almost, from the prime ministership by the legal establishment, and he thinks that Netanyahu had a lot to do with that.
Uh-huh.
Netanyahu and the paper that I used to work for, Yisrael Hayom, and if there are no serious legal obstacles, people that I know think that he will join the race, and if he joins the race, then all bets are off, and nothing that we've said until now is relevant. Not because he's necessarily so popular. He was quite an unpopular prime minister when he left office, but because he is a very slick political operator, and he's a very good performer, and he is the kind of person who can attack Bibi and damage him. And this perhaps is, I mean, I don't know if it's the most significant element, but it's a very significant element. Olmert does not have to establish his security credentials, which, as you know, is critical in Israel. Olmert launched two wars. Some will say launched two superfluous wars. And Olmert, according to foreign publications, ordered the destruction of the Syrian nuclear reactor. So he is, in fact, a candidate who can vie with Bibi in the security front as an equal. So we don't know how many parties are going to be between Labor and the Likud. Will it be two parties, meaning Kadima, headed by Mufaz, and the new party of Yair Lapid, which is also a centrist party, or will there perhaps be three parties? And here we come to the second unknown, or the third unknown, which is called Tzipi Livni. Tzipi Livni, who resigned from politics not long ago and who is now lecturing in various places, has not ruled out, and in fact I can tell you has not decided yet, whether she will return to politics. Now, if Olmert does not go back, she may return to politics at the head of an independent party, which would be a third centrist party in addition to Kadima under Mufaz and to Lapid. If Olmert goes back, he will try to bring all of these elements together into one big centrist bloc, and public opinion may be such that they will exert pressure on Lapid and on Mufaz to join, and on Tzipi Livni as well, actually, to join in an Olmert candidacy. There's another element which right now supposedly is known, but we're dealing with Ehud Barak. I wouldn't count on it. Ehud Barak, who is possibly the most unpopular politician in Israel right now, he may have deposed Olmert for that title, is supposedly going to run with his Atzmaut party, the party that he established when he broke away from Labor. Polls show that it's, give and take whether he can pass the threshold vote. I think that he will be shopping around, and I think he'll be an unguided missile until the end of the campaign, and he might very well join one, this or that party or the other. And people say that, yes, but he's burned his bridges with most everybody around. That's true, but we're talking about politics, and we're talking about Israeli politics in particular, so I wouldn't rule out Barak joining forces with one or the other of the parties involved. Derry, by the way, has announced that he wants to run on a social ticket. This puts him in line with the plank of Shelly Yachimovich, the leader of Labor, who is also running on a strong social ticket and who has done very well in the polls, showing about 20 mandates. Although the polls that have Olmert running as a centrist show that some of it comes at the expense of Yachimovich and Labor. Which brings us to the issue of the last summer's famous social movement. One of the leaders of that social movement is going to be running in Labor. And the big question is whether that energy, which brought hundreds of thousands of people to the streets, whether it still exists, whether it won't be, as usually happens in Israel, eclipsed by the security concerns. If there is a deterioration of the economic situation, if there are no security developments, the social element might be stronger. That will play in Yachimovich's favor, and it may form the basis, if at all possible, of some sort of link with Derry and Shas, which of course would deprive the right wing of their natural majority in the Knesset. I'll just mention it. There's always the question of whether I remember asking this every election, whether this time around the Israeli Arab population might decide to go and vote and to influence the outcome of the elections. But I don't see any sign that that's going to happen, so they'll probably get their 10, 11 seats that they always do, although if they went to vote in larger numbers, they could increase that number to 15, 16 Knesset seats and probably make a big difference. One also has to mention the situation on the right. It's not clear how many parties are going to be running to the right of Lieberman and Netanyahu. It could be two parties, it could be three parties, and it could be one party. The most right-wing member of the Knesset, Michael Ben-Ari, apparently is going to run on his own, which is good news if you expect him not to pass the threshold, because that would that would deprive the right wing of votes. I don't know that that is true, and in fact, probably if I had to bet, I would bet that he does cross the threshold of the of the Knesset vote, because unfortunately, his kind of Kahana-aligned views have a fixed following, if not a greater following today than they did 20 years ago. I'm just going to mention two more elements. I said Lieberman. Lieberman is supposedly a natural element of the right-wing coalition, and in fact, today he said that he would only lend his support to what he calls the national camp, which is the right-wing coalition. But people who know Lieberman and people who are around Lieberman aren't so sure. First of all, Lieberman has very good ties with Olmert and with Derry. Some will tell you this is the band of people who are either on trial or were in jail or will be in jail. But in any case, he has very close ties to these people. And also there's a thinking that goes that since Lieberman's ultimate aim is to become prime minister, if he has a chance even to keep Netanyahu in the opposition by joining forces, say, with Olmert or with whoever, he will do that because Netanyahu won't last in the opposition. He's not built for the opposition, as he proved last time he was on the opposition. Excuse me. And that might give Lieberman the chance he's been waiting for to take over the right wing. Finally, the two questions that Ori raised, which I'm only touching on briefly. The first is the peace process. I don't think the peace process is going to play any major role in the negotiations. Unfortunately, most Israelis these days, most Israelis these days are not interested one way or another, either in the peace process or in the Palestinians. What there might be is that since there are a lot of people who are interested in the peace process, who are very disappointed with the fact that Shelly Yachimovich and Labor are so, their focus is on social issues at the expense of peace process issues. And Yachimovich is already on record as saying that she wouldn't rule out joining a coalition led by Netanyahu. So that might shake up some of the left-wing votes, perhaps helping Meretz a bit. So Meretz right now is not doing better than the 4 or 5 mandates that most people usually expect it to receive. Finally, the U.S. election. I'm sure you're all aware of the fact that Israel has played a significant role in American elections, and I say significant, it's unprecedented. The amount of time and discussions devoted to Israel is unprecedented. The perception of the Israeli prime minister as interfering on behalf of one side is unprecedented. Now that the elections are only 3 months apart, we have to ask ourselves, what will be, if the reverse is true, what is the reverse effect? I think one thing that we can say for sure is that if Romney wins the elections here, this will be a big boost for Netanyahu's chances, because Netanyahu has been criticized for having, extended himself and for having gone out on a limb in his support for Romney and his perceived support for Romney. So if Romney wins, Netanyahu would be perceived as somebody, you know, who made a big bet but won it, took the jackpot, and people will say, well, this is a, you know, it's good to have Netanyahu around with who has such a good friend in the White House. If Obama wins, this will not work in Netanyahu's favor, although the very fact that Obama will be elected, I don't think it will have that much of an effect on Netanyahu. He won't gain anything. Some people might say to themselves, well, now we have a person who is against Netanyahu, so maybe we need somebody else. But it works both ways. Some people, Obama is not very popular in Israel, and some people will say that we need Netanyahu, who has already shown that he can withstand, you know, that he can stand up to Obama. But the big question is, the big fear that Netanyahu's people have is that Obama, if elected, will do something, will interfere in the Israeli elections in a way that will be detrimental to Netanyahu. Netanyahu has very bad memories of the Clinton administration's intervention in 1996 on behalf of Peres, and later on behalf, in 1999 on behalf of Barak, but in 1996 it was very blatant intervention. I personally do not think that Obama will do anything one way or the other, but it is a very major concern, I think, for Netanyahu and the Likud, and that's why it's another reason for them to be rooting for Romney. Thank you.
Chemi, thank you very much. This was, very detailed and great stuff. I will forego the moderator's privilege of asking the first question and go right away to the Q&A session. People who want to ask a question, please press star 6 in order to unmute yourself and go right ahead. Please introduce yourself as you ask your question.
Corin, I'm just curious of whether the Israelis are aware or care of how much damage another even more right-wing government will mean in terms of Israel's relations with American Jews, and especially with the younger generation that gets more and more disengaged from the Jewish state.
Thank you.
Ori, should I answer each question?
Yes, please go ahead, yes.
I frankly, I don't want to disappoint you, but I don't think that Israelis are aware of this issue, and I don't think Israelis understand the dynamics of the American Jewish community. I think most Israelis don't understand how it is that such an overwhelming majority of American Jews still intend to vote for President Obama. And don't forget that the government in Israel reflects the views of when they do cite American Jews or when they do hear American Jews, these are the Jews that are opposed to President Obama. So there's this disconnect in the Israeli psyche between what they know and read in the papers about the sentiments of American Jews voting for Obama and what they hear almost on a daily basis from their own politicians and from the Americans that these politicians play host to. I think there is a general concern in Israel about assimilation. I doubt very much whether Israelis ascribe that to the fact that there is a right-wing government in Israel.
Too bad.
Thank you. Next question.
Ailey Dezen, Port Washington, New York.
Please go ahead.
In your opinion, is the Israeli population willing to face going past the red line of Netanyahu, or what he ascribes to be his red line, with concern to Iran and its nuclear potential? In other words, are the Israelis ready to go to war with Iran? Not Netanyahu, but your sense of the Israeli population.
The Israeli population is not ready to go to war in Iran, and it does not want to go to war with Iran. It does not want to go to war with Iran if the United States is not involved or if it does not back such war. I think Israelis, even though theoretically they know what such a war might entail, I think they're not prepared for it psychologically. And I think Israelis are very perplexed by the fact that such a large number of top security officials are opposed to the war. And in fact, that may be one of the reasons why Netanyahu has had to back off. Having said all of that, however, I think it should be clear that if Netanyahu decides to attack Iran and gets the security people to acquiesce in such a plan, in retrospect, at least in the war, you know, when this war breaks out, Israelis will rally around to support it. What they will do with its aftermath is anybody's guess. So to sum up, beforehand, Israelis are very apprehensive about such a war. They do not appreciate the fact that Netanyahu has not succeeded in getting the Americans to back such a war. On the other hand, they do not believe in sanctions, and if there will be a war, they will rally around to support it.
Thank you, Chaime. Next question.
This is Gil Kulik in New York. Really a fairly simple, straightforward question. If, in fact, Netanyahu is reelected, and given the fact that, as you say, most Israelis seem to be at best indifferent to the peace process, the so-called peace process, in other words, indifferent to the whole issue of ending the occupation, what can pro-peace forces in this country like APN and J Street do to try to change that equation?
I'm going to pass on that question. It's not in my area of expertise, and I don't feel that, you know, I'm supposed to give advice. That's next question.
Bob Friedman.
Yes, go ahead, Bob.
Johns Hopkins. Yeah, hi. Thank you for your presentation, Chaime. Would you talk a little bit about the Jewish Home Party? Do we know who's going to be its leader? And is it going to cross the threshold, in your view?
Yes, the Jewish Home Party is going to run, apparently, together with the party called Tkuma, which is Uri Ariel, and they will be the biggest party. I can't tell you that I know exactly who's going to head it. It'll probably be Zvulun Orlev, but I may be wrong about that. The issue that's under discussion now is what happens to the party that's called Ayichud Alumi. There is talks between Abayit Ayudi and the Jewish Home and this party to unite and to run as one list. But as I said before, Michael Ben-Ari does not want to run in such a list. And there is the question of Aryeh Eldad, who is considered to be probably the most biting and the most, some will say the most extreme, but he's a very successful member of the Knesset. He gets a lot of press, and it's not clear whether he'll join Ben-Ari, there's talk of that, or whether he will join the combined forces of Habayit HaYehudi and the Tkuma party, which is the main part of Ayichud Alumi. So to make a short question longer, we still don't know. I mean, it's a mirror image a little bit of the situation in the center. We don't know whether it'll be two or three parties vying for the right-wing vote. And, of course, people who are on the left will fondly recall the 1992 elections in which two lists running on the right did not make the threshold and therefore did not get members of the Knesset and therefore allowed Yitzhak Rabin to get his very slim majority. So I'm sure everyone who supports peace is hoping for as many right-wing parties as possible and for a repeat of that.
Thank you. Next question.
Hi, this is Sandy Weiner from Los Angeles. What is the deadline for the parties to register and present their lists in order to participate in the election?
If I'm not mistaken, it's 45 days, but I really have to check that.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Do we have another question? Chemi, let me ask you this. Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian president, yesterday hosted a delegation of Israelis. I think that there were some mayors there and other dignitaries. And he said that he sees a window of opportunity for resuming peace negotiations after the elections in Israel and the U.S. And my impression is that his assumption is that Netanyahu will be reelected and so will President Obama. If in fact that's the case, do you agree with Abbas about there being a window of opportunity?
Well, first of all, Abbas seemed to be giving a plug for Olmert in his talks yesterday, saying that he was only 2 months away from an agreement with Olmert. Whether that works, given the Israeli atmosphere, whether that works in Olmert's favor or not, I don't know. It's very difficult for me to decipher Abu Mazen's mood. I spoke thanks to people who met him a month ago in New York, who came away one, impressed by his positive attitude, and two, impressed by his despondency, and were very taken aback by the harsh tone of his what they considered to be his harsh tone of his speech the next day at the General Assembly. I think that Abu Mazen, and we know that Abu Mazen has promised the U.S. administration that he would wait with his maneuvers at the U.N., with the recognition of an independent state, he would wait until the elections. I think that Abu Mazen is waiting more to see the results of the U.S. elections rather than the Israeli elections. I think that he buys into the narrative that says that Obama has been paralyzed by the Jewish lobby because of the elections, and that once the elections are held, he'll be free to do whatever he wants to do, and that if he sees after the elections that Obama is indeed thinking of renewing a peace effort, then he will go along with it. A separate question is whether that, in fact, will be the policy of Barack Obama after the elections if he's elected, and there are doubts about that, including my own doubts. Whether, in fact, once Obama is elected, whether renewing the Middle East peace process, and I don't mean, just pro forma, I mean in a very serious way with presidential intervention, I'm not sure that this will be very high on Obama's agenda, even if we look only at the foreign policy part of Obama's agenda. So I think that Abu Mazen, to answer your question, is in a mood that he's willing to give, say, another 6 months to a year. If Obama is reelected, and I don't think it has much to do with Bibi. Of course, if Olmert, I don't even believe I'm saying this, but if Olmert is elected, that might change things radically from the point of view of the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. But that's right now that's a theoretical issue. But if Obama and Netanyahu are reelected, I think Abu Mazen will give 6 to 12 months to see how Obama behaves. And by the way, it's 47 days, I think, before the date that one has to present the list.
One other question, Tammy, if you may, and that has to do with voter turnout. We've seen voter turnout dropping in Israel from somewhere around 80% in the early 90s to somewhere around 65, if I'm not mistaken, percent in the past elections. What is your sense of what voter turnout may be this time around? How enthused are voters? And what would be the implications of a low voter turnout?
The people who do not come to vote are usually thought to be more on the left than on the right. So a low voter turnout works in favor of the right, and a larger voter turnout works in favor of the left. And I think, by the way, that that's true in America as well. So if the more that the voting turnout increases, the better the chances for the left are. Except for the fact that elections are going to be held on January 22nd, which is a dangerous date in Israel because it could be stormy weather, and I don't know, who will then come out to vote. But if you put that aside, I think the main element is, where is the energy of the social protest movement? If there is any chance for the left to seriously increase its voting percentages, is by getting these kinds of people who were disengaged in politics, younger people, Tel Aviv residents, people who are interested in social mobility. If these kinds of people come out and vote, and if this energy can be harnessed by labor, by Stav Shafir, one of the movement's leaders who is going to run in labor, then I think we might see some greater percentages working to the left. With the ultra-Orthodox vote, I don't think, there's not going to be any change. They will come out 100% to vote. The radical right will come out to vote in the same percentages, which are very high. And another big mystery is the, regular Likud voters, whether they will be enthused enough to come out to vote in big numbers or not. It's too early to tell. If the Likud has a list which does not have a serious North African politicians who are identified with the social movement, they could have a problem, and that might work in the left wing's favor.
This is Jerry Fisher. Can I ask one more question?
Yes, please go ahead.
Is the tumult in Syria going to be a factor in the election at all?
Not unless something happens, which very well might. But in and of itself, I think Israelis, I think like everybody in the world, are very concerned about Syria, but they don't really know, what should be done, what can be done, and what should be done, who are the good guys and who are the bad guys. The irony is that I'm assuming that if you asked Israelis, they would just as well go back to the days when Assad had a stable regime, because he was a known quantity and everything was under control and the border was quiet. But I don't think, I can't perceive that Syria has any electoral impact, unless, of course, things deteriorate there, which they very well might between now and January 22nd.
Donnie Rimba wanted to ask a question. Are you with us, Donnie?
Yes. Yes. Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Yes.
Yes, Femi. My question is this. The polls indicate that for Olmert to form, if he entered politics again and he was to form the party that got the largest number of votes, for him to form a coalition, he would need Shatz and Yisrael Beitenu to form that coalition. So the question is, with those parties required to form and then maintain a majority coalition going forward, what progress could Olmert achieve if he restarted Israeli-Palestinian negotiations, given the history that Lieberman has in obstructing Barak and in Netanyahu's government on the peace front?
Well, I'm sure that if you ask Olmert, he'll tell you we'll cross that bridge when we get there. First, give me the majority. Second of all, I don't think mathematically that it's true that he absolutely needs both parties. I think he can make do with one, at least in order to form a majority together with the Arab parties, who he may not invite to join his coalition, but who can support it from the outside. Now, whether such a coalition will be able to uphold serious negotiations with the Palestinians, I don't know. But I can draw a scenario where all he needs are, a few months, say 6 months, which he's most likely to get under any circumstances. And if he achieves an agreement, he'll go to elections with that agreement. So at least if we're assuming that such negotiations don't drag on for years, I don't think that this will be a major impediment. I agree with you that I think the weaker link here will be Lieberman rather than Derry. I agree with you that if Lieberman joins a coalition, he will be waiting for the right moment to leave in order to make his bid for the leadership of the right wing altogether. So it'll be a race between Lieberman and between Olmert, but it's not an impossible scenario to foresee that Olmert will be able to conduct negotiations. If what Abu Mazen's saying is true, say it's not 2 months, say they're 6 months away, reach an agreement and then put that agreement, you know, in a new elections, which he may or may not win. That's a different question altogether, but it won't prevent him from reaching such an agreement.
Henry, we have two more minutes. Let me ask you one last question, and this has to do with a poll that was just released. You probably have not even seen it yet. This is a poll taken among first-time voters, and the youngsters apparently really like Yair Lapid. He comes in second after Likud. We haven't spoken much about Lapid, so if you can just say a few words about who he is and what we may expect from him.
First of all, you're right. We haven't spoken enough about Lapid. Lapid has been doing better in the polls than anybody expected, given the fact that he announced that he was joining politics already several months ago. And he has also announced, by the way, that he will not be joining any existing party. And if Olmert does rejoin, may have a hard sell trying to get Lapid to join him, but as I said, I think in the end he won't have a choice because of public pressure. Look, Lapid is the most popular Israeli columnist ever, or at least in the past 20 years, and there is no one person in America that I can compare him to, given that probably 50% or 60% of the country's newspaper readers at one time read his columns. So he's a very well-liked figure, and he's working on gaining a respect of the people. Now, he enjoys the fact, one, that he's new, and, you know, Israelis don't like the politicians that they have, and traditionally they go after new faces. Almost every election there's somebody new in the center that creates a lot of... And he has to still establish himself as a serious person because there are a lot of people who do not view him as a serious person in the sense that he's a very good-looking guy and he boxes and he goes to bars and he's not your typical politician. I'm not surprised by the fact that he's doing well among young people. Whether they will vote for him or not, I don't know. He has said that he wants to be Minister of Education, so... Like, this is a very particular situation in these elections, both he and Shelly Yachimovich, who may in the end be the main contenders on the left if, you know, nothing materializes out of Olmert or Tzipi Livni, none of them want to be prime minister, and that is the problem of the left. Without Olmert and without Tzipi, they do not have a contender, and it's like ceding the elections to Netanyahu in advance.
Good. Chemi, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. This was very informative and very useful. I would ask people to go back to our website for a recording of the call. I'm sorry about the background noise. We couldn't mute people before the call, so my apologies for that. I thank everyone for joining us, and we'll see you soon in another call. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ori.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.